Welcome back to Canna Week, brought to you by New Frontier Data, where we deliver the week's top headlines in cannabis and hear experts weigh in on the impacts these stories are having on the industry. I'm your host, Heather Wickline. We have a great show lined up for you today as we take another look at the industry outlook and get some insight on New York legislation. One quick announcement, this will be my last show before I head on maternity leave. So I will be leaving you in the great hands of Abby Kaufman of New Frontier Data. She'll be filling in for me for the next couple of weeks. All right. Well, first up, joining us today is someone who is heavily involved in many aspects of the industry. He serves as vice chair of the board of the federally focused Cannabis Trade Federation and will assume the chair position in this year in 2021. He is the chair of the Virginia Medical Cannabis Coalition and board member and chair emeritus of the New York Medical Cannabis Industry Association and on the board of the DC Medical Cannabis Coalition. Holy moly. He also has a full-time job, people, as the VP of Corporate Affairs at Columbia Care. Please welcome Adam Gores.
Great to be with you all. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, Columbia Care, I'm happy to be with you all representing Columbia Care. I've been involved for 5 years now. We're a multi-state company. We operate in 18 U.S. jurisdictions plus the European Union and really started with and continue to have a strong focus on medical cannabis and all the opportunities there, even moving into adult use. So good to be part of the conversation.
Awesome. Well, we're excited to have you on and hear some of your input. And our next guest needs no introduction. He is our in-house expert and leads our amazing research team here at New Frontier Data. Please welcome our Chief Knowledge Officer, Mr. John Caggia.
I'm delighted to be back, Heather. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure. All right. Well, we have a lot to cover, so we're going to dive right in. Cheddar.com reported 2021 Cannabis Industry Outlook, M&A, Capital Thought, and Global Opportunity. So the year 2020 was a landmark year for cannabis, and it sounds like we should expect even bigger and better things for 2021. So going into 2020, investors were fairly cautious as we saw a real pullback on capital flowing into the industry. However, the industry really performed amidst a global pandemic. Adam, do you expect like a real renewed interest for investing in cannabis for the year?
Well, I think we've already seen it in how capital markets are responding. But I also see that, you know, the cannabis industry isn't just publicly traded companies. And we know that there is a lot of activity, and we know that the rising tide's lifting all ships, whether it's an MSO or single state operators and everyone in between. So I think that's really optimistic. And so I think we're also seeing new types of investors coming and entering to the market, ones that are recognizing that the industry has really begun to mature in some ways, and that there's ultimately, you know, the potential for, you know, lots of state normalization bills to move forward, as well as with a slight Democratic majority in the U.S. Senate. You know, some optimism that the type of legislation that's needed to help small, mid, and large size cannabis companies, things like 280E, access to banking, are closer at hand than they've ever been before.
Right. I know, John, you and I have talked about a lot of people have been on the sidelines for a while waiting to kind of jump in. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I echo Adam's view on this. You know, it's been interesting just watching the publicly traded cannabis companies since mid-December or so, when it became clear that there's kind of the tide was leaning toward the Democrats. And by then we had definitive conclusion of the state races. And, you know, they've been on a tear, and this feels different. And maybe I'll use Columbia Care as an example of why I think we're seeing a different type of momentum in the market during this cycle than we've seen during other kind of speculative post-election cycles in cannabis, whether it's the 14, the 16, or the 18 cycle. And to me, one of the big differences is, particularly as you're looking at the multi-state operators, which is where the retail investors are able to play, or where the let's call it more conservative capital will be looking first rather than making deploying capital into individual businesses. As you look at the MSOs, it was one thing when we were talking, you know, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, about a multi-state operator being in 3, 4, 5 markets. It's an entirely different proposition when you're talking about MSOs being in 18 markets. That starts to feel like a national operation. That starts to feel like a national market with real legs behind it, with real infrastructure and capacity, with economies of scale, and with all of kind of the industrial or commercial professionalism that you would expect for a company that's operating at that level. And I think one of the effects of that, outcomes of that, is that it's giving newer investors a lot more confidence that this is a real thing, that this industry is being run in the way that you would run any company that was operating across multiple states with multiple jurisdictional issues that needed to be addressed. And I think that's going a long way in allaying some of the concerns of deeply capitalized but more conservative investors who were wondering whether cannabis was going to be something that was going to be here to stay. The scale of the MSOs in particular, I think, has played an important role in the context of the number of markets that they can now operate in.
Right. Well, I know part of this article, they had pointed to Viridian Capital Advisors pointing to the Aphria Tilbury deal as a signal of a new phase of Canadian market rationalization. And we just seem like it's the whole market's primed for market consolidation. Adam, do you expect similar activity in the U.S.?
Well, I do, for different reasons, interconnected, but different reasons. I think Canadian marketplace is very different. And the U.S. is not just one marketplace. It's dozens of marketplaces. And so I think you're seeing separate but somewhat connected measures, which is folks are looking now to be able to pick through the litter of finding good matches. And I point to some of the deals that Columbia Care has announced in the last few months or closed on that really show real synergies. And so that's been our investment thesis. And I think that is different. It's very different than what we saw 2 years ago, which was try to combine square peg, round hole, because there are two cannabis companies. Now, companies like Columbia Care are looking for, you know, rationalization. How does this really help my value prospect and growth opportunity in the long run? And I don't think, and one of the reasons why you've heard our CEO, Nick Vita, talk about it, why Columbia Care has been very quiet in this until recently, because I think the fundamentals have certainly changed in the U.S. And we've been able to really look and find companies that have common values and leadership team and common mission and backgrounds. And really, I think that's led to some really interesting deals that we're announcing. And I would expect that others too, really coming off the heels of what Columbia Care has done, are going to find opportunities and be looking at the similar strategy. And we've already seen a few, come to the surface already.
So Adam, I have to ask, and forgive me, Heather, but I've been watching Columbia Care's growth. I mean, you and I have known each other for a little bit, and I've just been blown away by the pace of momentum at which you've been building. You're in 18 markets now. Where are you looking next? Where do you think the real opportunities for a brand like Columbia Care are going to reside next? And maybe a subset of that, are you more focused still on the medical side of the industry, or are you now really leaning into the adult use side as well?
Well, I'll start with the first answer, which is that, you know, our background really does come from the medical side. And I think that's to our advantage. You know, Albert Einstein Medical School and Montefiore Hospital in New York did a study that saw that 67% of adult use customers are actually seeking cannabis for a medical or health and wellness reason. So we think that we're actually best advantaged to help folks that are looking for a product either to treat a serious debilitating condition or are looking for something that's going to improve their quality of life through a less severe condition of which they're suffering, which can be well treated in an adult use marketplace. And so we really see it's all of the above strategy moving forward. And we think we're best positioned from our longtime medical focus to be able to really work to solving the needs of people, whether it's a 35-year-old woman who has sleeping issues or whether it's an oncology patient that needs access to really specific cannabinoid profiles to treat a debilitating condition. As for where I think our strategy is and where maybe you've started to notice and see Columbia Care more is that we've kept our head down. We've been really focused on developing the markets that we're in and maybe compared to some others of our peers and friends in the industry, that our markets are coming online, maybe a little bit later. We haven't been flashy with quick entrance into highly contested marketplaces and rather have focused on building out our Virginia operation, putting the investments into New Jersey quietly, to continuing to focus in Massachusetts to find long-term gains, and then really looking to new marketplaces that are going to be the next place that people are going to be talking about, which is Utah, which is really coming together to create a great program for patients and ultimately a program that has incentivizing companies to make the appropriate investments that are going to yield results, not just for our bottom line, but ultimately for the broad stakeholders. So I would continue to expect us to do more of the same. We may fly a little under the radar. It's because we're busy working.
That's awesome. Well, I want to move on to our next article. TheHill.com reported Cuomo vows New York will legalize adult use recreational cannabis. So previously on CannaWeek, we have speculated that legalization in New Jersey would trigger this domino effect on the East Coast. And that seems to be the case in New York with Cuomo's promise to legalize recreational cannabis. Adam, you are a resident of New York and it has attempted to legalize cannabis before. What do you think has derailed those earlier attempts?
Well, I think legalizing through the legislature is tough, and all good things are usually pretty tough to do. And so we recognize that and don't dismiss it. I think there's been broad intent to get a deal passed. And I think looking back to, if I can keep my years straight at this point, 2019, when this was first coming up, we weren't quite there. But last year in 2020, Governor Cuomo was, days away from coming to visit a cannabis facility and checking it out to show his commitment to getting it done. And then we know what we're living through, and it's COVID. And so I think this is obviously the year. There's a whole lot of reasons for it. But New York, I think, has an interesting opportunity. New Jersey next door has done it. They've made clear lanes to encourage, existing medical operators to invest. And we're doing so. I think New York has to make that decision is how quickly are they going to move this program forward? Are they going to make sure that, companies like Columbia Care and others are making the early investments that are necessary, not just to meet the initial market demand, but with federal, with the Democrats taking control of the U.S. Senate, the idea of a future federal state that, opens up borders and so forth, it, from a pure economic theory, the time is now to invest in New York. And Governor Cuomo, never underestimate his ability to, sniff a good, economic development opportunity for the state. And I think Governor Cuomo is going to recognize that making sure companies like Columbia Care and other medical operators, as well as new entrants, social equity licensees, are really appropriately positioned to make early investments in the Empire State that are going to stand the test of time. So when we look back in 10 years that we really see continue to see a vibrant New York cultivation, processing, and dispensing marketplace.
Yeah. So you're saying our legislative process isn't quick and efficient?
Well, they're hard things to do. And I dismiss everyone is working really hard on it. So are we. I think we just need to be thinking about what the end state is, because a lot of times in these adult use, cannabis negotiations and battles, for lack of a better term, we forget and lose sight of, what's important. That's of ensuring that we have revenue coming out of this to help the state, but also invest in communities that have been disproportionately impacted. But, right. We can't ignore, especially as market dynamics are changing throughout the country, across the world, that really the time is now for New York to ensure that it is getting companies like Columbia Care to invest for the long run, things like that we're already doing in New Jersey. So we're optimistic. I'll leave it at that, Heather.
Are you optimistic for this year, for 2021? Or do you think
I don't think New York has a choice. I think that, third time is going to be the charm.
John, what's your take on this with New York?
Yeah, I think, there's been this convergence of forces that have changed the political landscape and political calculus to get this done. And so I am equally optimistic. I think, when we've been talking about this idea of the dominoes starting to fall on the East Coast, the fact that, Cuomo, whether it's through social media, through some of his media interviews, has already asserted that this is now his intention, has, I think, erased that lingering question about whether this would be something he would tackle head on. And then two, New Yorkers are smart people. They recognize that adult use in New Jersey is going to generate a huge amount of revenue from consumers in New York. So at a time when New York State cannot afford to be losing that market opportunity, there's imperative here. New York, to me, is a classic case of this idea that we've been pushing where, broadly speaking, the country has legalized in the places where it's easy to legalize. And now that most of the places that you could have ballot initiatives have advanced these measures, or and where you have strong majority support, you're now encountering the markets where even when there's public support, the political dynamics in the markets are much, much more complex. So we're getting to the point where it's easy to legalize, but really difficult to regulate. And if you're passing this through the legislature, where you need to define both the legalization and the regulation, it gets really, really messy. Now, I think even that will ultimately kind of work its way through. But given that this is a conversation that's been happening in New York for a while, now, you know, I think everyone really knows where the boundaries lines are. You know, and this is going to be negotiation that's tinkering around the edges rather than kind of addressing fundamental issues about the implementation of this market. And then maybe just a final point about outlook. You know, part of the reason why we think New York is so consequential, once we resume travel, once we can get back out into the world, you know, New York is New York State, New York City is the most visited destination in the country, is one of the most attractive and popular destinations in the world. For a lot of the global community, for a lot of Americans, the first time they're going to experience legal regulated cannabis is going to be in New York State. And you know, it's hard to overstate the implications of that in terms of informing attitudes, informing people's views on whether legal cannabis is something that they would want in their own communities. So not only is New York going to play a phenomenally consequential role in kind of opening the door of the experience to legal cannabis, for a lot of, you know, the global community who will be traveling through the city over the coming years. But two, it's also going to bear the responsibility of getting it right so that people say, we want this in our own backyards. So I think just something notable about New York that I think is different from virtually any other jurisdiction in the country.
Well said.
Well, just wrapping up New York, Adam, what do you think current operators in New York can expect if recreational cannabis is legalized in 2021?
Well, the good news for New York is that we get to look to every other state that has come before us and seeing what's worked and what hasn't. And that's going to mean that New York's adult use industry and market dynamic and access for customers and patients should be the best yet. And some of the things I think that are fundamental in that is every market has looked to medical operators like Columbia Care, who's in New York, you know, to be the initial backbone of an industry, but quickly, in many cases, helping seed social equity entrepreneurs to be right there, to be there at the beginning. And so I expect that's going to be the dynamic, is really looking to companies like Columbia Care that have got experience with tested and trusted products in the Empire State. We hope and expect to be doing that to help the state with its initial economic development goals and ensuring that we have enough supply in the marketplace to make sure, to John's kind of subconscious point there, that they've got to get it right. And one of the things is making sure that you have enough cannabis to actually sell to consumers, that supply equals what will be a tremendous amount of demand. And so there's a lot of room at the table for a lot of folks to be part of that solution. We're just excited to, you know, hopefully and expect to be part of it.
So I'm curious, Adam, given that New York currently has one of the most restrictive medical licensing regimes, how do you think the adult use market is going to be regulated? Do you think there'll be it will be a more expansive market, or do you expect it to remain a fairly kind of tightly limited license environment?
Well, you know, New York, each state had its own different reasons for their medical programs, and New York is one of the best in many, many ways and has some drawbacks. And one of them is that we don't have enough operators and enough diversity in the industry right now, in both ways. And I mean diverse in multiple different terms. And so we've been broadly supportive that the state needs to look to new RFP rounds to bring in new pharmaceutical processors or our registered organizations, as we're called in New York. And we still hope that they will. But we think that the initial licensing round is going to be pretty open. I think we're going to invite people to come and be involved in the industry in multiple different ways. And where in that industry, I think, are the details yet to be solved. But we certainly can expect, you know, a wide swath of new, diverse social equity dispensaries, reminding everyone that the ROs, the 10 registered organizations in New York, have 40 in a state of 20 million, which is one of the reasons the medical program has suffered. That's one for every half a million New Yorkers. Now think, how easy is that to access your medicine? So we're going to have to see a plethora of new dispensaries, which means great opportunity for us. We're really experienced at making products. And so we think that the end future state in licensing shows a lot of folks getting involved in delivery and in packaging and ancillary services, micro cultivators to do New York's grown, and also for a bunch of new dispensary licenses, you know, within reason to make sure that that these very businesses that we hope to see to be successful can be successful. And so that means ensuring that they can't make a dollar on day one and that they have a sustainable business. So it's all about equilibrium. We're not quite there yet, but there's still some hard work to do. But ultimately, I think it's the ROs helping get the market going, a whole new licensees, and a lot of different ancillary players getting involved in it.
That is good to hear. Well, this all sounds very, very, very optimistic, and we are going to be all watching and waiting to see what happens. Well, we are almost out of time, but I wanted to just thank you guys both for taking the time to be here today. We appreciate it, and thank you to our listeners for joining us at Canna Week. Please be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. If you have not already, please sign up for a free newsletter at newfrontierdata.com/newsletter-sign-up. I'm your host, Heather Wicklein, and I will see you in a few weeks. Take care.
New Frontier Data provides this podcast for entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated in this podcast should be taken as legal or financial advice. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the company. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by New Frontier Data employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the company or any of its officials. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact our legal department.